This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We are on remote, virtual, talking to John O'Dell, whose new book has just come out. John, read us an opening poem.
Grandma Chandler. Chandler, the name on the stone says, yet she lies not amongst them, but on the other side of the small cemetery. She rests there beside the one who left their bed for burial 50 years before her, when tuberculosis made widows common as the cornstalks rustling in October's weakening sunlight. After the Psalms, the crushing avalanche of earth, lightened wagon retraced its muddy ruts. They led to a farm, two children to raise, a mattress that swore he'd never lain there. Why she married, then buried a Chandler, two World Wars later, she never thought worth explaining, but she drove his Model A Ford, tires spitting the gravel of country roads, clashing through gears as she clashed with him, her sons, the women they'd married, her years' unceasing abundance. All their farms failed, her sons fled, but she remained, a stone taken in the orbit of another carved a half century before.
That is John O'Dell. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem. John, why did you choose that poem to introduce the book?
Well, I think it's a good poem because it speaks to, the book is primarily a book about memory and family, and there is an awful lot of connections between both an American and an Australian family. So I began with an American grandmother, Grandma Chandler. It's also a poem about obsession.
Yes, and I think that this book is a family album of sorts. You are half Australian, half American, and we get that flavor in the book. What did you feel was the most important thing about this poem you wanted us to know?
Well, I wanted people to understand the character of my grandmother and how interesting it was. We discovered her grave and found that she was not buried next to her second husband, with whom she spent most of her married life, but had gone back to a husband that she lost almost half a century before. So it was very much that I was trying to get across.
John O'Dell with a brand new book. What's the title?
It's called Sons and Tattoos.
Please let us have two poems from that book and we'll tell you what we think about it.
This poem is called There, and it records my first day in America. There. Mum becomes mom, Aussie accent discarded as easily as the wool shorts and cardigan of arrival. I keep the photo, her words about it. I always wondered about those sailors behind us. Where were they going? What became of them? The street photographer got some of this onto his negative that first American day. I use the wider angle lens of 60 years. It's easy, love. Just put one foot in front of the other, and before you know it, we'll be there. Seized by here's kaleidoscopic pigeon feathers, shadows, cable car din, a new chill air. I'm four, know nothing beyond the instant's quite narrow matting. Mom and camera miss exiles 25 years, looming up between her and a foot on a Sydney street, a past thinning, fading, with the coils of cigarette smoke on the ceiling of our room at a Polk Street hotel. We wait for a man, a ship, a future, a week overdue. Higgledy-piggledy sidewalk shadows are the only answers I can offer you, Mum. We are going where those sailors went. Study the shadows. It's easy. Put one foot in front of the other. They get us all there.
We are getting a bit of your history, and we want to hear more.
You want another poem or more history?
We do. We would like another poem before we launch into what makes you tick.
Okay, this poem is called The Seaman's Wallet. Who was he? The wallet answers number 530836, issued by the Department of Commerce. Its rivet-studded brown leather cover shows a ship with twin stacks, pennants flying, and from each sloping funnel curls, not smoke, but a sharply etched question mark. A tattooed rose bloomed on his left forearm. He had cholera and typhoid shots, weighed 170 pounds, was a serious man. In his passport photo, a fountain pen bulges in his coat pocket. A wiper, an oiler, he carried sweat and diesel in his canvas duffel with a discharge from the Marine Devil. In Boston, San Diego, or Sydney, he looked for, or left, the James D. Trask, the Pawnee Rock. War's tide bore him to us, its commerce shanghaied him away. The tandem question, when would he return? We learned it was to be with the others, the fighting finished, to plant corn, thresh wheat, bale sweet alfalfa, stack it till a roof, a barely closed hayloft door, allowed no more. He farmed and found out what he'd missed by running away from hay. The furrows, his tractor's wake, he plowed, spring and fall, till earth cloud closed over all, and now laps patiently against memory's stubborn stones.
That's a stunning poem and a stunning last line. Memories, that is a definition of poetry, I believe. Memories, stubborn stones, that's what they are. John O'Dell, from all the past and all the blur of history, how have you restored it in your mind? We could say clarity out of chaos, all that happened, your DNA. How did you recall it into poetry?
Well, I recall it by, I think, catching images of memory. Something like the smell of the alfalfa, or the sight of my father's tractor, or the sound of that tractor, or wheat being threshed. It's, I guess, a sensory memory that is the primary mover of all this. Of course, the object itself, and I'll shut up, but I have that object, that Seaman's wallet, and it's precious to me.
Yes, you make visuals. So I know that some of this is ekphrastic poetry, because the picture of your father really is so sharply defined that that has to be something you looked at and memorized. So we have your jotting down images, your remembering the past, your journaling, but the pictures also are so stunning. And also the idea of your father being a seagoing man and then all of a sudden a farmer. So do you have all those qualities?
Well, I'm afraid that I'm very much lacking in the farm department, and I'm not much of a gardener, but I do love to travel. I have the wanderlust. It is in me, and I have passed it on to my children. They as well have the same.
And it's in this book. So much is in this book. Sons and Tattoos. John O'Dell, tell us, you have been in several journals and anthologies, and can you name some of them?
Well, I was first anthologized in a poetry collection called Hungry As We Are, and that was a Washington, D.C. anthology.
I remember that one.
And also A Harvest of Maryland Poets, and most recently, Maryland in Poetry, a project of the Maryland Writers Association.
Right, and I remember you being in four reviews. Now, let me see, Georgia, Birmingham, what are the others?
Piedmont Literary Review, the Atlanta Review, the Baltimore Review.
Right, you're big in the review department.
Yes, I am.
And you have two previous books, so tell us those titles.
Those titles are Painting at Night and At Beauty's Pawn Shop.
I love that last one, Beauty's Pawn Shop. Let us go on with a present book and let us go back to a poem. John O'Dell, this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, virtually, of course. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Okay, this next poem is called Aligned, December 1st, 2008. Of course, it's happened before and will again in 44 years. Leisure, chance, not intent, offer up this evening gift. Turn my eyes millions of miles upward to study an elegant triangle, proving only the generosity of miles and time, mind's hunger for pattern and line. My radio prophesied, told where and when to look, but I'd forgotten. I'd never seen, and no, I won't see again, that lustrous thumbnail lining up with Jupiter, dim suitor, above and to the right of Venus, the far candles of my birthday sky. When we first aligned, my father, mother, and I, a worried Yank sailor on leave, a tired Aussie teacher, their child in a hot Sydney hospital, Mars ruled a time madly out of joint. Our journey, our years together, seemed tonight remote as the stars, unfound through any telescope. Yet I do find them, connect them to this night's sky, to 2052, with even lines of wonder and thanks.
You bring that poem home in a way that is the tone of the whole book, I think. Wonder and thanks are very much a good way to describe this book. So your family seemed to be a wholesome experience, and it seems that even with a father who was gone a lot, that you have a very strong bond. How do you describe that feeling of security when you were left so many times?
Well, most of the leaving was over by the time I was really able to process it. When the war ended, we arrived in the United States, we being my brother and mother and I, went to a farm in Illinois and had this glorious, idyllic 5 years on a farm in Illinois. And my father was constantly there. We worked, we lived together, I think, as closely as it's possible to live. And we had a wonderful time. I did, anyway. This poem is called Asking for More, and it begins with a quotation from Archibald MacLeish from his poem, Tourist Death. And he asks, do you ask more? Do you ask to travel forever? Not long before he died, my father went north, bored his Studebaker through a wide redwood, puzzled over the trees of mystery, posed my mother before totems, trading posts, then beside a Mountie, the milky waters of Lake Louise. Now I approach the sheer wall of years he stood upon when he made that trip. I too find myself following a needle's northern urge, looking at Raven's wooden preening, hearing his hoarse morning cries, the afternoon thunder of calving ice, salmon shove above a creek's unyielding flow, fight for and win the death that birth ordained, and in their spawning outruns. I stand halfway across a Ketchikan bridge, refusing the river's infallible instruction. In steady drizzle, in silence, I ask for more.
More what, John?
You know, it's interesting, Grace, and that more changes every time I take another look at that poem. At the time I wrote it, it was more travel. I wanted to keep going. It was more experience. Today, it's more understanding, more craft, more knowledge. It's more love.
More travel inward. Yes, and we're getting it. The father, again, the most important imprimatur in literature, I think, and you're proving it in this new book. How about your own father poem, I believe, which is the title poem of this book? Can we have that one?
Sons and Tattoos. When we pulled off wedding rings, our son, 17, wanted a tattoo, a red guitar to shriek from his shoulder. United in this and nothing else, as if our flesh, not his, would burn beneath the needle, we flinched at the idea, tried to counsel him about infection, said it would cost, hurt. Our Trump, it would be forever. So what's wrong with that, he asked. He strummed through the changes of all his hypothetical futures, fortissimo at the unforeseeable turnaround. He smiled sincere pity at our ignorance. Now the divorce is final, and I live in a neighboring state. When he visits me, he brings a guitar to help bridge our growing silences. I study the flaming ink on his shoulder, but see my father's forearm, his tattoo, a stout coil of rope knotted to a thick blue anchor, unmoored at the end only by death's unfailing tide. There, on an arm that held me in its crook, my bare arm offers no anchor, no coil of rope, no red guitar. It feels bare as I listen to my son's B.B. King licks.
Well, that has an upbeat ending. And was it difficult to write?
It was very difficult to write. It was a very wrenching sort of experience when involving separation and divorce. But we are overcoming this. We have overcome it. We're having a very good relationship now.
That comes through in the poem, I think, but it's a lot. Is it difficult for him to read that poem?
Yes, it is. It is difficult, but he is always supportive of everything I do, and I'm so grateful.
You know, if we could cross that bridge with our children, whether it be poetry or whatever, we've come somewhere. We've come somewhere, and you've certainly shown that in your work. So I know you have a classic side, and I do want to have you share your poem, which shows your breadth of literature as well as everything else.
Okay, this next poem will be called Your Bow Toward Night. It is about Odysseus, and it is a lot of poets have tackled the subject, what becomes of Odysseus after he reaches home and goes to Ithaca? And this is kind of my speculation about it as well. Your bow toward night. It starts with a quotation from the Inferno. And turning our stern toward morning, our bow toward night, we bore southwest out of the world of man. He'd not be penned by your exploits. When the boy became a man, he needed room. What arrows could he notch with you around? The island was small, you learned, after all. And she, what could she do but choke back the rage and welcome you back? But because of those years of lying alone, her bed seems small now with you in it. She let it show. Her turned back let you know. After you'd killed your dog and the rabble feasting in your hall from your stores, you needed something else to slay and wish you'd left just one slippery suitor to hunt, then skewer on your cunning sharp spit. Sand underfoot is your foreplay of choice as you race aching bones to the oars that fly beyond the world, beyond all hope, your stern toward morning. Your bow toward night.
That moves like liquid gold, really. That story just moves so silkily. Was it hard to write? Did it take many revisions?
No, actually, this one came relatively quickly once I got the basic setup of how do the characters relate now? How are they in this present that has arrived to them with Odysseus's return? You have a son, you have a father, you have a mother. And this is my speculation as to what becomes of Odysseus.
Right. And having taught literature, this might have been incubating in you for a long time. So explains the ease with which it came out, maybe.
Well, 32 years of teaching, high school English teaching, I frequently came across Odysseus and his adventures, and many of them stand out in my imagination, but this one just kept nagging at me.
It's a beauty, it's a beauty, John.
Thank you.
Yes, we're talking to John O'Dell. This is almost the Library of Congress. Frequently, it is by vibration, the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. And now we're going to have a poem where I'd like you to dissect it about where you were when you wrote this poem, what made you write this poem, what it means. Take it apart.
Okay. I think I will do After Defibrillation. And it's a poem that came about after my heart attack about 4 years ago. It's called After Defibrillation. Tonight, I just want more than the late night news, police tape in Baltimore, oil spills, cleanup crews, one more convenience store heist, five ads for Malibu's. And yes, I want moonlight, telling tall tales of its travels, dreams, child clear, oh, bright ones, to sort and simply unravel all my error. Yes, setting it right. Whales holding in their flukes gavels, bringing in acquittal for Eve, Adam, Darwin, and all our brood. I'd fix what I broke, then leave, as if I had time, could or would. I want June, October's fiery leaves, a winter mind empty of should.
Now, you could not have thought of any of the images while you were under attack. So, did you recall this? Did you actually have such a thought?
Yes, but it would have been several months later that I processed this traumatic experience. And I continue to be surprised that rhyme is the vehicle that offered itself for this poem. And I'm really grateful that it did, I think.
You know, I'm not surprised whatsoever, because I think rhyme comes to us when the tumult is so great under the line, it needs control. And that's what this shows, because you certainly earned that poem. And if ever poetry saves, that proves that a heart attack has given you a blessing in a way. I know that sounds Pollyannish, but to come to new thoughts, to come to new poetry, to be new again, that's pretty good. That's as good as it gets, John.
You're absolutely right, and I am grateful.
I know, and we are too for you. So let's hear one more poem.
Okay. I think I will close with...
I think we have time for one, and then a final.
Okay. All right. Then I will offer this one, which is called The Flash Mob. This is another Australian poem. It's comes from coming across an old abandoned prison in Tasmania, Australia, where women convicts served out their sentences or most likely died. This is called The Flash Mob. Little stands but the high sandstone walls of correction. Daisies, timid and sparse, poke up today in Tasmanian spring through the cracks of the old factory floor. Here women and their children carded wool through years of 12-hour days before dying of exhaustion, hunger, withering grief beneath transported sun. Listen to the songs of the women in solitary, and in this season's pale light, imagine the flash mob lifting their skirts and slapping their bottoms to show contempt for the chaplain who, atop hypocrisy's towering, hands-high mount, had ridden out once again to admonish these wicked to turn toward repentance. Although Sidney ordered one of his men to unbutton breeches on an Australian beach so gathered Aborigines would know he brought humans with him, not ghosts from the dreamtime. These solitary songs, defiant bums drumming, speak more clearly of our kind than flaccid phallus on command or crumbling jail stone in spring sunshine.
Wow, that cleaned up a nasty story with some beautiful language. There's a novel in that poem, I believe. That is a whole novel we could study, quite a story. And now, John, let us have a final poem.
Okay. Final poem is going to be What Fish Think. And this is starts with another quotation by Hui Zi. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. But he asks, how do you know what the fish think? You're not a fish. They hope for elegant presentation on a dish made by a master in love with his brush, or they dream of fresh fallen plum blossoms in icy water, flickering in the lanky shadows of mountains miles from the intrigue of nets or a cormorant's cunning. They think of insects mesmerized by the sky's last sleight of hand and of smooth pebbles, dark, buried leaves, minnows veering madly always toward tomorrow. They think of all the fishermen drowned last year in floods. They think of 1,000 poems they'd write if they were poets and not carp. Don't tell me what I don't know, Wheezy. We're all fish. Go to the nearest stream and listen.
And listen. The voice of John O'Dell with another side of him, a philosophical poem. And who knows what we're swimming in, John? Thank you so much. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan family and additional support from the Sinipet Fund, Maryland Humanities, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.